From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with your calls, some topics to talk about?
Yes, music. Can it really help you recover from surgery if you have a surgical procedure? We'll talk about that. What goes on in the surgery suite may not just stay in the surgery suite. Mm-hmm. And female Viagra, the new drug, Addy, is it useful? What is the drug? Should it even be approved by the FDA?
Mm-hmm. What's our recipe?
Roasted corn with Manchego cheese and lime. It is delicious. Delicious.
That number again is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our first caller is a listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Tom and Zorba. I'm wondering if you could give me some advice on how to view the statistics on the health risks of radon in the home.
So what kind of health risks are you concerned about?
Well, specifically in the basement, which is where I don't spend too much time, but it's where I exercise. I have a treadmill down there that I use 3 or 4 times a week for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And last fall, I got the big idea to check my air quality. So I bought one of those radon tests. That mm-hmm. It's like a 3 to 12 month one. Mm-hmm. And I left it there for 6 months and sent it in. And the levels came back somewhat elevated, which, you know, I was hoping to sort of get the all clear. But instead, it's at a figure that really got me wondering about whether I should try to do mitigation or how real that risk really is.
There are a couple of things involved when it concerns radon, and you bring up a good point. How real is mm-hmm. the actual risk? First thing I do when there's a test that I'm unsure of is repeat the test with a better test. So mm-hmm. I would get the best radon one there is. I would go to, you know, I go to Home Depot, Amazon.com, another place. I'd sample it again and see whether or not it really is high. High would be the issue, not low, not medium, and whether it's high. Then you have to look at it and you say, well, how often am I in the basement? You know, I'm in there on my treadmill. Am I there for 20 minutes a day? Am mm-hmm. I living in the basement? The big difference is how long are you in the basement?
Right, yeah. It isn't a huge amount of time that I'm there.
Right. So, you know, and then what happened was, this is a very good example of sampling when you don't need to sample and then you become concerned with the result. And so all of a sudden you sampled it thinking, well, I'll do this. I'll make sure I'm radon free. And then you get a result that goes, well, maybe I'm really not radon-free, and then what does that really mean? So the issue is, over time, whether or not it makes a difference. So over time means if you are a teenager living in the basement, in your bedroom, mm-hmm. and you're there quite often, and then you've got 30 years for the radon to actually do possible damage that may cause leukemia or cancer, that's different than if you're an adult with a more limited life expectancy where you're there 20 minutes three times a week or 4 times a week. One thing is you sample it again, and if the better sample is there, that's the one I believe in. And the other thing is to ignore the whole thing. The reality is I don't see any major data within the state of Wisconsin that shows that radon is actually causing significant amounts of cancer in the state. Now, don't get me wrong. There are people on the other side of this argument. They go, wait a minute. The radon is here, and that's why we have this cancer and that cancer. I think that some of it is baloney. Put on your seatbelt, exercise, follow the Mediterranean mm-hmm. diet, and you're going to live a long, sweet life. Much more important, and exercise. You're probably going to get more from exercise than you are going to be reducing the risk of the radon. So I hope that helps you.
It does. It puts it in perspective. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413, the number if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener in Kenmore, New York, joins us. Hi.
Hi. How are you? My wife and I think you guys are a riot.
Oh, thank you.
I have a question for you. I've had bypass surgery in 2006 and mm-hmm. carotid in 2011. I exercise. I'm on an 81 aspirin regimen. Mm-hmm. I do take a statin at a very low level. My cholesterol is in good shape. Mm-hmm. My problem is I get muscle and joint pain mm-hmm. Once in a while, I get this, what I call a flare-up every 2 or 3 weeks. where the muscle pain becomes severe and the joint pain becomes severe, and then I wonder what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I read when I talk about taking an NSAID says you have to be careful. There's a risk for possible heart issue patients like me. There's risk for long-term use, so I avoid using them and put up with the pain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what long-term use means for
me. Good. Excellent.
I don't know what the side effects are going to be.
Excellent. Good choice. You don't know what long-term is, and you don't know what the side effects. Mm-hmm. You come to the right place. You know.
I don't know how large a dose to take. I don't know whether I should be taking them or not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, NSAIDs are quite interesting because they're ubiquitous. They're all around. You know, ibuprofen and naproxen, over-the-counter drugs. FDA might not even approve it today. Who knows? You know, every time you take a drug, you have effects and you've got side effects. So I got a question for you. You're on the Buffalo area, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. What happens when it snows? Do you go outside and drive?
Oh, of course we do.
Of course you do. Otherwise, you'd be stuck in your house.
What if it's Buffalo area?
It's Buffalo. Of course you do. Of course you do.
And the next day, it'll be sunny.
Yeah, that's right. So you go outside. Now, what if there's an ice storm? Do you go out in an ice storm, or do you try to stay at home?
It depends.
It depends. That's right. If you've got a big event, you'll probably go out in that ice storm, right? And if you have to go to the store and get a carton of milk or a pack of cigarettes, which I'm sure you don't do because you're a public radio person, you're probably gonna stay at home. So this is a risk. Okay, the risk of death from going out in your car and driving is greater in an ice storm. Okay, a little bit less than if you're driving in snow. And, of course, it's less if it's sunny weather in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
The only car crash, by the way, I've ever gotten into in my life that could have caused an injury was at 11 o'clock in the morning on a sunny day when a woman who was texting plowed into me at 40 miles an hour. I was fine, had my shoulder harness on, my seatbelt. I calculated I buckled up probably 50,000 times for that one event. Okay, but I'm into my car a lot. Now let's take that risk analysis, move it into anti-inflammatories. Long-term use is if you take it, for example, naproxen, 500 milligrams twice a day, every day. That's long-term use. And the data shows there is an increase in a risk of heart attack. There, you know, there's a slight increase. Is it a lot? No. Is it a little? Yes. How much is it? We don't know. In other words, we can't quantitate it, and that's what the FDA has said. So what is a safe amount? Well, a safe amount is less than twice a day at full dose. That's a safe amount. Is a smaller dose better than a bigger dose? Probably, but we're not sure. Is taking it every so often, once a month or twice a month, less than taking it every day? Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. So I look at it as quantity of life and quality of life. Do I want to live a long, awful life? Or do I want to live a long, sweet life? Well, sometimes aches and pains, you know, reduce your quality of life. They don't make you feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
They're bad. So I would say, if you're bothered, take your anti-inflammatory and don't tell your cardiologist. That's what I would say. Because they'll take their fingers and they'll go, shame on you. They'll do that hand stroke. You shouldn't be taking this at all. And you go, well, my muscles ache. The other option is stopping your statin. Maybe the statin is causing the whole thing. Well, wait a minute. Statins are useful. I've got heart disease. I should be taking a low-dose statin. So you've got the statin on one side, which is helpful, right? But it might reduce your risk of heart disease, but you've got side effects. Then you've got the NSAID on the other time, which you have to take eventually. You then sit down and you make a risk analysis of what's good for you, just like with your car. Sunny day, snowy day, icy day. If I were to make the risk for me, I would say I would take the anti-inflammatory. And frankly, I mean, I'm an older guy. I take anti-inflammatories when I ache. I take naproxen. And you know what I say? If it cuts my life short, well, at least I don't have a backache.
Thank you. The naproxen is the one that I've zeroed in on also.
I think it's the best. It's 12 hours. The data is the best on it. It may have the least side effects. May is the word that I'm using, not does.
Excellent. Thank you. You really helped me with that. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. And thanks
you
so much
most
for the
welcome.
Call. We appreciate it. So, Zorba, we talk about music and surgery.
Music and surgery, when you're undergoing general anesthesia. So I've been in a surgical suite assisting. I used to, many years ago, assist on surgical procedures. Have you ever assisted on a surgical procedure?
I don't think anybody wants me in the operating room.
No, you're not. Here's Tom Clark, and he's going to hold the retractors on it.
Let me tell you some jokes.
Many years ago, I used to assist because that's what we did. I was in a hospital called Methodist, a small hospital in Madison. First 10 years of my practice, patients underwent surgery. I was one of the assistants in surgery, and I liked it. And we used to pal around. We would talk. Some of the surgeons would have music on in there. And this was a particular there where they looked at studies of music in the surgery suite. So epidemiologists and statisticians in The Lancet looked at 72 randomized controlled studies, which covered various forms of music in the suite. So in other words, did they pipe in music through speakers? Did they pipe it in through headphones? Mm-hmm. And they looked at different procedures, open heart surgery, colonoscopy, and then they looked at how long people actually stayed in the hospital. They wanted to see whether or not music when you're out, quote, what's going on when you're out? Well, your brain is still going, right? You don't have consciousness, but your brain is going. And lo and behold, they found that people who had music had a 20% reduction in post-operative pain. That's a significant reduction in post-operative pain, and also a reduction in anxiety in the hospital post-op. So in other words, the ones who had music when they were in the surgical suite had less pain and less anxiety post-op.
Yeah.
Post-op. And that's kind of very interesting.
It is interesting. You don't think about how the music could affect
when you're
not conscious.
So you don't think of the effect of music or the surgeons talking or whether or not in surgical suites it's common to often tell jokes, especially after things are done. You know, as we often do, especially after a tense situation, we often tell, we laugh about things or talk about things that are happening that are appropriate. And you forget that the brain, even though it's unconscious, is still bringing that information in.
Does it matter what kind of music?
Well, that was the other thing. They weren't able to control for that. So, for instance, the surgeon may want to have rock music or may want to have Beatles or something like that, whereas the person really hates that and they just want to have Mozart. Right. And somebody else might want to have Beethoven. And then you have Shostakovich on the other side. And then you've got heavy metal. They didn't control for that kind of a thing. They just looked at music in and of itself. And I think this brings up kind of an important point that the milieu, the environment that you're in, even during surgery can affect post-op pain and anxiety. And it says a lot sometimes for the environment that we're in life. It might be that people who are more anxious and have more pain might be in a more noisy, chaotic environment, and that adds to their anxiety and their pain. Yeah. If you look at what's going on in the subconscious level.
I always thought of music in the operating room as having an effect on the surgeon.
Right. No, and that's it. To relax people when they're really concentrating, and I tell you. But on the other hand, sometimes the music does the opposite. So I find I like to listen to music, but when I'm writing my newspaper column, if I'm in the middle of the column, I have to shut it off. I can't listen to the music. But when I'm doing other things in editing, I want to listen to the music because I want my mind somehow distracted by the music as I'm going through another form. But that's it. Different surgeons like different things and different music, and the environment matters. This shows. Next time you have general surgery or next time you have open heart surgery or they take out your colon or part of your intestine or orthopedic surgery.
Letting me know.
Ask for music. Just put that in. Good. Put that in there.
800-462-7413, our number. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a Nashville, Tennessee listener, joins in now. Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Dr. Zorba. Mm-hmm. I have a question about gallstones. I've been diagnosed as having a gallstone in the bile duct and other stones in the gallbladder, but there have been no symptoms other than elevated liver enzymes. And I'm wondering if surgery wasn't recommended immediately. Essentially, they said wait until it becomes painful and then go to the ER. And I was wondering what would be the best way to approach it. I'm 63 years old, and I haven't had surgery before, and I would prefer to avoid it if possible.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. I just want to I just want to, for also everyone who's listening. So you have a stone, you have stones in your gallbladder, and you have an elevation of liver function tests because they think this is related to the stones that are in the gallbladder.
That's correct. There have been no other symptoms, no nausea, no diarrhea,
okay.
None.
So they've said, don't have surgery until you have pain, and then come to the ER and we'll take out your gallbladder.
Essentially, that's what it boils down to.
You know, this is a time, and Tom is going to give the answer to this. What do you think he should do?
That doesn't seem the right thing to me.
That's right. So what would you recommend, Tom? Getting a second opinion. You know, if you were my patient and you came in and you said, first of all, I've got these stones. How did they find them? You must have had some. Did you have some symptoms initially?
No, there were no symptoms other than a blood test, elevated liver enzymes.
Uh-huh.
I was sent for a scan,
mm-hmm.
and the scan determined that there were stones in the gallbladder and a stone in the bile duct.
So I'm going to save you. I'm going to save you a lot of money, okay? And I hope that you will take this as a donation to your favorite public radio station, because public radio is a gem. You don't even have to pay a copay for this advice. Get a second opinion. I'm going to give you the second opinion. I think you need your gallbladder out. That's what I would recommend. So you've got to go somewhere else. You've got to go to either another. What I would do is I would go to a surgeon. I would bypass a gastroenterologist, go to a surgeon, and say, I want an opinion on this because, you know, if you've got a stone in the duct that has caused elevation of liver function tests, then why not have your gallbladder out before you get cholecystitis, which is an inflammation of the gallbladder? That's the only thing that makes sense to me. I don't know why they're waiting.
Can you go to a surgeon right away? Don't you have to be referred to a surgeon?
Not at all. You can go to a surgeon. Depends on your health plan. And most health plans, many health plans, I won't say most, but many, you can go make an appointment with a surgeon right away. What you do is if it's a large group, you call up, you make an appointment, you say, I'd like you to look at the scans, I'd like you to look at my blood tests, and I'd like an opinion of whether or not to have the gallbladder out. It's better to take out your gallbladder electively, in other words, before there's pain. It's now a same-day procedure, and I would have that puppy removed. That's what I would do.
Thank you, Doc.
And there's no copay for this. See, you just got a second opinion without a copay. Public radio is your copay.
Yeah.
Notice I'm hitting public radio as the copay. You see the thing.
I noticed that.
Good luck. Let us know what happens.
Thank you, Doctor.
Sure. You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. The surgeon isn't free, though.
The surgeon is not free. No, the surgeon is not free.
Before we take a break, Zorba, time again now to hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Well, actually, this week's quibble comes from a seldom-heard-from branch of the Grammar Police, the Menopause Police. Christine from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, wrote the following on our Facebook page. Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, I love your show. Now enter me as the anti-medicalization of menopause police.
Okay.
On a recent show, you referred to ovary failure. And you were talking about men and tea. Can we please just say testosterone? I didn't hear anything about testicular failure because we never use that word with me. Rumpf. I submit that henceforward you call it ovary retirement, because really, that's what it is.
Ovary retirement, that's right. So does that mean it's testicular retirement on the other side? Ovary retirement, it's not failure. I love it. I will take that advice to heart. Thank you, Menopause Police.
I like tea instead of testosterone. She is right about that.
She is absolutely right about it. But we're going to talk testicular failure.
Yeah.
We'll see how that plays.
Did Zorba forget to dot his I's or cross his T's?
Oh.
Just send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Post it on Facebook or follow me, hashtag Dr. Zorba on Twitter.
Our recipe coming up, that's next. More of your calls, some more of your emails, too. We'll be quacking it up with Dr. Zorba here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number again, if you have a question for Zorba, and we have an open line now for you, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, time now before our next call for our recipe. A yummy one?
Yes, yes, of course. Well, when do we have an unyummy recipe?
On occasion.
On occasion.
On occasion.
On occasion. You know what we're going to do? We're going to do an all soy. I think we should do an all soy one. Nothing but soy. That's what you would say on occasion. Yeah. So this is roasted corn with Manchego cheese and lime. Manchego is a type of cheese. Mm-hmm. It's a robust cheese that you might have had somewhere at a restaurant. I'm not sure, but it's a robust cheese.
Okay.
Yeah, you might have tried it.
Robust is good.
Robust is, yeah, I like robust. So start out with 6 ears of sweet corn unhusked. And you could use frozen corn if you don't have that. But if you've got fresh corn, if it's your time of year when you can have fresh corn, it's even better.
6 ears of sweet yellow corn unhusked.
You know, during the season, I buy lots of corn from my local corn people and I freeze it. And I do that. Have you ever done that? Have you ever taken corn off the cob and freeze it? It's kind of a fun thing to do. It's a little messy, and you freeze it, and it's wonderful. It's really good in the middle of the winter. 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
2 tablespoonfuls of unsalted butter.
2 big tea unsalted butter.
But you're going to use a little kosher salt.
Kosher salt.
Freshly ground black pepper.
Mm-hmm. Pepper.
A jalapeno pepper seeded and diced.
1 jalapeno pepper seeded and diced.
And remember, the seeds and the center part, which is the pulp, contains most of the heat. After you dice it, make sure that you wash your hands before you scratch your eyes or touch other more delicate parts of your body, which may respond to the capsaicin that is within the pepper.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
I speak as the voice of experience when I talk about touching other parts of your body.
Okay, all right. Moving right along.
Back in the day. 1/2 teaspoon of crushed red pepper.
A half a little tea, crushed red pepper.
We're not going to go into detail on the last thing with the jalapeno pepper. It brings back memories. 1 lime cut into 4 wedges.
1 lime cut into 4 wedges.
1 cup of finely grated Manchego cheese or another robust cheese. Mm-hmm.
1 cup of finely grated Manchego cheese.
Yeah, I mean, you could use Gruyere. Gruyere is a wonderful robust cheese, but Manchego would be good. Parmesan, I don't think I would use with this for sure. 1/4 cup of thinly sliced chives.
Quarter cup thinly sliced chives.
Yeah. Now, 2 teaspoons of finely grated lime zest.
2 little tea finely grated lime zest.
And if you don't have a good zester, buy a good zester. We're going to put that on our website, zorbapastor.org, the zester that I would recommend, because having a good zester is the key to a good life. So preheat the oven to 450. Roast the unhusked corn on a baking sheet, turning occasionally till heated and crisp, about 15 minutes. And that's why if you used frozen corn, you'd have to defrost it and it wouldn't be quite as good. Let it cool. Shuck the corn. Cut the kernels off the cobs. The idea is to have kind of roasted corn there. Heat the oil in a large skillet over high heat. Add the corn kernels and saute until heated through light golden brown. That's about 3 to 5 minutes. Add the butter and stir until melted. Put a little salt and pepper in there. Transfer it to a wide bowl. Sprinkle it with the jalapenos, the crushed red pepper plate. Wonderful. And then squeeze the lime wedges over it. Sprinkle it with the grated cheese, chives, and lime zest.
It really sounds good.
It's really good. And you can eat it directly, or you could actually use like a tostada, some kind of little, you know, tostada or a cracker or something like that. You could use a spoon. If you were really hungry and you didn't have utensils, you could use your fingers.
Okay. So how can I get this recipe?
If you have access to electricity and Wi-Fi, you could come to our website at zorbapastor.org. There you will find fine dining and other fine advice with fine photos and fine repartee. That's zorbapastor.org, or find us through Facebook.
I knew I was missing something in life. I'm going to get one of those zesters.
Oh, yes, that's it. That's it. You see, you got it. It will add zest to life.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, an Appleton, Wisconsin listener, is with us now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, a few programs ago, you were talking about a pinch and a dash, and you didn't have an inkling what that was.
You're right. So you're the pinch. You're the pinch and the dash police.
Yes. Well, if you remember when you were a kid, it says, inch me and pinch me, went for a walk. Inch me got lost. Who was left?
I do remember that. My grandmother used to say that. I do remember that.
Really?
My grandma Sarah, yes. Yes, and then she would pinch me. Brings back these memories. I have no idea how old I was, but I was pretty young because I kept on laughing. I certainly wasn't a teenager that much I know. So what's a dash? How big is a dash bigger than a pinch?
A dash is a 16th of a teaspoon.
Oh, wow.
A 16th of
a teaspoon.
Yeah,
it's hard to get a 16th of a teaspoon. You know,
that's a little hard to measure.
Well, it's hard. You know, well, if you don't have measuring spoons, Tom, it's impossible. So for you. But the measuring spoons that I have, I think, come in quarters. I don't even think they come in eighths. So it would be a quarter of a.
I used two of them.
You'd have, that would be, so a dash is a 16th of a teaspoon. Okay. And
yes.
But a pinch is in your fingers.
Is an eighth of a teaspoon.
Oh, a pinch is an eighth of a teaspoon. So a pinch is more than a dash. Well, that's interesting.
Now, wait a minute. Are you just making this up?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
No, I have.
What's your reference?
No, she's the source. You know, you have to come back with the source. You can be the source. You're the pinch and the dash lady. Yeah. So you're the source that all others quote from. Come on, Tom. That's right.
Two dashes is one pinch.
Two dashes is a pinch. Yeah, that's exactly it.
I did that math.
Eight pinches is one teaspoon.
How did you come up with this?
Oh, I have a book that I found, and I was so excited I found this. Wow, look at this. It tells me one cup is 48 teaspoons, et cetera, and like... six of a cup is two tablespoons plus two teaspoons, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
So this is... That says it all. Thanks. Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks for filling us in.
Okay. All right. Now next time you have that, you can get this correct.
Thank you. Keep listening.
And let us know the next time we got something wrong, which probably won't be far from that.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good day.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a Lake Barrington, Illinois listener joins us. Hi.
Hi. Pleased to speak with you, Zorba Pastor. I'm an 80-year-old man, and sometimes when I'm standing and then I decide to turn to my left, I sometimes have a bit of an awkward first step, occasionally a slight imbalance, and I've noticed it, and I decided to hear what your response is.
Mm-hmm. So when you turn to the left, you have a little imbalance. By the way, you don't sound like you're 80. You really sound much younger than 80s.
I'm mentally active. I've written two nonfiction books in the last 3 years, so I am active.
Oh, wow. That's right. And you're physically active, too, I take it?
Yes, I go to a physical fitness about twice a week.
So twice a week. Good example. Physically active, mentally active, you don't sound like you're 80. There are a lot of issues, you know, involved with that. The brain is a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. I am completely convinced of that. And muscles are like muscles. If you don't use it, you lose it. Okay, so a bit about it. First of all, we have a dominant side and a non-dominant side. And even though you might be right-handed, you might be left dominant in terms of legs. And I'm the example. I have a trainer. I go to a different trainer every couple of years because I train at the UW, and they're all the same age. They're all like 20 or 22, young guys, men and women. They say I can do more than I can do, and they motivate me. And the one I have right now looked around. He's a snowboarder. I'm a skier. And when we were doing things, he said, notice how on your left leg I am am right-hand dominant for sure. Mm-hmm. Said, notice on your left leg, you're much better at doing this. You're much more stable on your left leg than on your right leg. I had never noticed that. And when I do certain exercise now, I notice the difference. And what happens is, as we get older, we lose muscle mass, 1% roughly a year, no matter what we do. If you're the same age, if you're the same weight as you were in high school and you're 80, you look in the mirror, you sag. You don't have the same muscles that you had when you were 18, you know, when you graduated high school. So part of your noticing this when you go from one side to the other might be the fact that you are dominant on one side and that muscle has atrophied more because you're not using it as much. And then it can actually get a little bit worse after that.
You make me smile. I'm a downhill skier, too. And I think when you mention that, I do think I turn better in one direction than the other.
You absolutely do, and that is your dominant leg. That's the one that you turn on. You're always more comfortable. So look at that in terms of your stance, and then go and do quad sets or other things to build up the other leg. That's exactly what I would do, and you actually can do that. You can either go to somebody who's a trainer who knows what they're doing. You can talk to your doctor, get a referral to a physical therapist. They'll give you some exercises, or you can just go on the net about quad sets. But it is your non-dominant leg that probably is the issue where you're weaker and you're a downhill skier. Do you still ski downhill?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. I try to do that at least twice every winter.
So you're 80, so you get a reduction in your ski pass, right?
Exactly. I always kid them about that, you know. But I always tell them I'm a senior and they don't card me.
And they don't charge. Well, thanks a lot. Good luck. Do those exercises.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sure. That's helpful.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
You know, here it is. You've got somebody who's 80, who's exercising, who's writing, who's keeping their mind active. And those are really actually the important things because at 80, the risk of disability is so much greater than at 60, than at 40. And doing everything you can to keep your mind and body active is really important.
And before we take a quick break now, Zorba, let's dive into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, you eat graham crackers, right?
Of course. Dipped in milk, especially when I was a young child.
So tell us a bit now about the inventor of these beloved crackers, Sylvester Graham.
That's right. Sylvester Graham, he was a great guy. Great guy. Born in the you know, just after our country was founded, so a long time ago. And he felt that the problems that people have essentially, I mean, remember, he's the inventor of the graham cracker, which, by the way, he didn't really. When he invented the graham cracker, it had fiber in it. The graham cracker today is a very poor cousin of Sylvester's because he said you should really eat whole grains. He was right about that, but he believed that if you ate his graham bread, and he had graham bread made with graham flour, that it would take care of problems that he called venereal excess. He felt that intense physical desire for sex was a problem that led to a cesspool of problems. That carnal exercise, basically having sex, led to indigestion, headache, feebleness of circulation, feebleness of mind, insanity, spinal illness, epilepsy, death of your offspring, among other things. And he propagated the concept that you should not have sex until the age of 30, that men and women should remain virgins, eat his graham cracker stuff, eat his graham bread until the age of 30, and then make love no more than once a month, and then procreate, and then stop doing that, because if you have sex, you are going to ruin your life.
Yeah,
that's what he thought.
Yes, that's all nuts.
How do you know? I mean, look at the problems we have in society.
Does this have anything to do with his graham crackers?
Well, that was part of what he said. He was also selling graham flour, but he was also selling the concept of vegetarianism, which really wasn't a bad idea. However, several times during his life, he was assaulted by mobs that were run by butchers who felt that he was disturbing their livelihood because he was recommending a vegetarian diet.
He was assaulted by mobs of butchers?
Of butchers.
Come on. I can't even picture this.
Of course you can. You've got
they have butcher knives?
Butcher knives with white aprons.
You're making this up.
I'm not. Soaked with blood, running after Graham and trying to get him out of there because he is ruining their livelihood by recommending a vegetarian diet. And then you've got these cranky people who are thin who are trying to protect him because they're the vegetarians. I mean, vegetarians today don't know how lucky they have. Butchers are no longer assaulting them.
Maybe those butchers didn't like that one sex a month.
Maybe that's what it was. That's exactly it. That, you've got it. And virgins until 30, they said, forget it.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this new segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Some interesting research that's coming up next. More of your calls, and we'll check out an email too. Coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, the FDA has approved what's known as the female Viagra pill. Let's talk about
that's it. Right. Flibanserin, that's the name of the drug. Addy, I believe, is the name brand of the drug, too, has been approved. Doesn't want to be called the female Viagra because it's looked at. It's actually totally different, a totally different system. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that's going to be the nickname for the drug no matter what they do. And the issue, there are a number of issues here. The issue is whether or not the FDA should approve this at all because it has minimal effect on a minimal number of women.
And you think it should have been?
Oh, I think absolutely. I have no doubt about it that if this drug will help 10% of the women 10% of the time, then for that woman, if she wants to use it, it's 100%. I mean, you have to look at it in that way that these drugs should be available. Do they have side effects? Of course they have side effects. And one side effect is low blood pressure. Well, guess what's one of the side effects of Viagra? Low blood pressure.
Yeah.
Viagra can't be used with certain drugs such as nitrates and other drugs which are certain types of blood pressure pills because it can cause low blood pressure, but that didn't stop Viagra from being used.
Would we be taking cholesterol pills if only 10% of us benefited from them? Would we be taking any other drug
that will
only help 10% of the people?
There are other drugs. It's really a function of whether the drug is it's a function of whether or not somebody wants to take the drug and look at it. Let's look at the drug itself. First of all, it doesn't work when you look at Viagra, Levitra, Cialis. These are drugs that improve, we'll say, circulation to the penis. Yeah. They're useful. Men want to use it. This is more in the term of sort of an antidepressant. And the issue is whether or not we're we're calling a woman with reduced sexual desire something that's pathological. And that's, I think, the real issue. If you look back to Freud's time, he insisted that women were hysteria, basically, and that hysteria was a result of sexual dysfunction. And it was sort of medicalized the term. And it may be that women don't want to have sex. Why should they take the pill in the first place? Maybe it's just hypoactive sexual function.
Take it if they didn't want to have sex.
Well, there are a lot of issues surround here, and that's part of the issue with this. There are people on one side that say, I don't need a drug for sexual function. I don't want to have sex. And the other issue is, well, maybe women do want to have sex, and they want to have something
to do with
their
sexual
desire.
They're going to sell a lot of these pills to women who aren't going to get any benefit from it.
Absolutely.
Making a bunch of money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's $1 billion, maybe it'd be a $2 billion a year drug. But, you know, the issue is women may want to try it and some women may benefit from it. And that's why I think it's sort of the democratization of that. And I agree with the FDA. These drugs should be available, but also the information on how it's not useful for many.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. And let's get back to the phones now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Neshkoro, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I just had a question when it revolves to, like, whole body vibration and whether it's truly beneficial. You see them at, like, the gyms, and now some stores are carrying them, you know, selling the machine. And supposedly it helps with, like, losing weight and circulation therapy. I would just kind of like to take your take on it.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at Duck Soup with the Marx Brothers, any of those old movies?
No, but I do remember the old belt.
The old belt is exactly what I'm talking about. The old belt. This is a derivation of the old belt where, you know, you'd be in the belt and it would shake you. And the idea is that it would exercise the belly fat and you'd get rid of the belly fat. The only way to exercise, unfortunately, is through exercise. And the idea behind the belt was this way you don't have to exercise. Just lean back and the machine will exercise for you. And, you know, I've got these pictures of Laurel and Hardy in my brain, don't you? With the belts. And the belt is shaking Laurel, and Hardy is looking at him, and the belt gets all twisted up, and it's a sort of comedy issue. But they were present. They were ubiquitous in gyms, even when I was a kid. And I remember when my dad used to be on it and said, no, this is good for your waist and it's good for your back and it helps your back. And if you're on it, it makes you feel better. It doesn't burn one calorie at all. I mean, it's passive and therefore you're not burning any calorie. You're not building up muscle. You're not doing much of anything else. It's clearly quackery from a point of view of weight loss or mm-hmm. building up muscle. Now, be that as it may, full disclosure, I have a massage chair in our house. My wife, Penny, bought it for me about a decade ago. She brought it in, and it was for one of my big birthdays. She said, I know you love this massage chair. I use it periodically. It shakes me all over, shakes up my legs, shakes up my shoulder, shakes up my back, and it makes me feel good.
Makes you feel good.
Makes
yeah.
me feel good. So if you're using it to feel good, that's fine. And in that case, you may want to spend your money on a massage chair instead so you can other people can share it. But no, it doesn't build up any muscle. Sorry. Exercise is work. That's what a calorie is. It's a measurement. It's a measurement of work. So no quick fix there. How much do the machines cost, by the way? Do you know?
They're about $2,300.
Oh, that's all? Oh, $2,300. Yep. Two
that's
for
all.
5,000. I get a husband and wife team. That's exactly it. By the way, that's about twice the price of a massage chair. Just thought I'd let you know they're getting
I don't know if I want to share.
Well, thanks for your input. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Before our next caller, Zorba, let's grab a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health email bag. This question comes from a listener named Rick. He writes, Dr. Zorba, I believe I have contracted toenail fungus. Both of my big toes appear bruised under the nails and are a bit tender. Looking back, I had been wearing rubber shoes and no socks for several days while working outside. A pharmacist told me I need an oral medication to cure it. Is this true? If so, how can I get a script without making a doctor's appointment, which could be weeks away?
Well, first of all, I don't know how you get a prescription without making a doctor's appointment. I mean, it depends on whether or not the physician wants to see you or not. So, and it could be weeks away, and it's a copay away, and it's inconvenient. Mm-hmm. You have to take off from work and all the other things for it. So,
but does he really need an oral medication?
Well, first of all, toenail fungus doesn't kill you. It just doesn't look really, really good. Mm-hmm. Over-the-counter remedies, and there are lots of them, putting Vicks on the nail, putting mayonnaise on the nail, painting the nail with something called potassium permanganate that made everything look purple, putting stuff under the nail, putting Lotrimin, which is over-the-counter, under the nail. Pretty much none of them really work very well. Oh. The pills work, but they only work 80% of the time. They used to be very expensive. Now they're much cheaper. There also is something called Penlac, P-E-N-L-A-C. It is a prescription medication. It's sort of a toenail. It's kind of like a nail polish that has an antifungal in it, and you have to put it on every day for, I think, 6 to 12 weeks, and it works about 60 or 80% of the time. A lot of people just leave it, and they don't do anything at all with it. So one recommendation is to leave it. The prescription drugs are much more effective than the over-the-counter remedies, which for the most part are useless.
have a curious question to keep Zorba on his toes, you can send us an email about that too.
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our number. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Wallace, Idaho. Hi.
Hello, guys. My issue is I've had three eye surgeries in the last 3 years to repair the damaged retinas. Mm-hmm. And it saved my vision, but I don't want to have another eye surgery. Mm-hmm. And I'm not getting really great answers on what I can do to keep my retinas in good shape.
Yeah, what have you had? You've had retinal detachment or what?
Yeah, I've had two retinal detachments and some retinal tears.
Wow. Let's talk about general health. Your blood pressure is what?
It varies between 130 and 140 mm-hmm. and 80 and 90. 130 okay. and 140 on the, I believe that's called the systolic,
mm-hmm. Are you
and
on,
80 and 90 on the diastolic.
Are you on blood pressure meds at all?
No, not at all.
So
I try to keep my salt intake very low.
Okay. How's it been since your salt intake has been low?
You know, it had gone up to 150 mm-hmm. over 90, and mm-hmm. then I dropped it. 15 points.
Yeah, you've got a machine at home? You have a blood pressure machine?
Yes, I do. We have two.
You have two machines at home? Is that overkill? Why do you have two machines at home?
Well, we have the one where you use the stethoscope, uh-huh. and then we have the other one where it's just the automatic reading.
Yeah, do they agree? That's very interesting. I have two machines at home. That's why I'm asking. I have two machines at home. One that uses the stethoscope and one that's automatic. That's why I'm asking. There was a Thomas laughing. It's kind of funny. I wanted to see if you have the same OCD about blood pressure that I have.
I'm a little bit. That's why I'm calling your show. It's like my doctor. He said, you know, don't engage in any mixed martial arts, and if you do, wear a helmet. Well, I don't plan on doing that.
Oh, this is too much. This is too much. So, number two, general health, do you exercise?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you weightlift?
No, not really, but I chop wood.
Okay.
It's kind of cold up here in the North Country.
The reason why I ask is when you go and you're lifting heavy things and you – Valsalva, it's called, when you go – you are actually increasing the pressure in your chest. And I think there's some evidence that you may be increasing the pressure in your eyeball. Because think about it. When you lift sometimes, you squint as you're lifting. And I don't know if that pressure of when you're doing that is going to affect the retinal tear. I don't know. But it's something I would think about as a possibility. There's no double-blind placebo-controlled trial that's going to tell us whether or not it makes a difference. So I would stay away from lifting heavy things where I had to increase my pressure by going, I got to do this. That's what I would stay away from. In other words, I would think about that. Like you said, wear a helmet if you're doing martial arts. So I would think about that. The other question is, what's your pressure in your eye? Do you have glaucoma? Do you get it checked every year?
I get it checked every year. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, the eye surgeons I have are really good.
Oh, yes.
They're really.
Yes.
Okay. And so, in fact, there's a eye doc here in town, too, that checks it. So my pressures are great on the eyes.
Okay. Those are the things.
There might be some kind of diet or heard about vitamin D.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think you've got a shape issue. It sounds to me like you have really great ophthalmologists, eye surgeons that are paying attention to it. It may not happen again. You know, your goal is to do that. But as I said, I would not Valsalva. I would engage in exercise. But I would keep my blood pressure under control because we've got to remember that blood pressure affects every single organ in our body, every organ. And so it affects your eye, too.
Well, there was one other thing, too. Is in my former – now I don't do it anymore. I used to truck drive all over the place. Mm-hmm. So when I first got the symptoms of a flashing light, it concerned me. Because you don't want your vision blocked at all
right.
while you're driving. You
right.
could kill someone. So I went in pretty early, and they said that was a really key factor of my diagnosis
yes.
and my treatment.
Yes.
So if anyone out there is experiencing any kind of flashing light, mm-hmm. it's very important they see a retinal specialist or a eye doctor ASAP. It can mean the difference between sight and blindness.
Thank you. Thanks for pointing that out. Thank you. And and if anyone wants to really take an accurate blood pressure, get two cups and use one on one arm and one on the other. Thanks for your call. Thanks for your tip. I really appreciate it on the retinal tear issues and flashing lights.
Good deal.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number. And before we sign off today, Zorba, let's read a quick listener tip that showed up on our Facebook page. A loyal listener named Lori in Brookfield, Wisconsin, shared the following. Dr. Pastor, I was listening to your program today, and a caller asked about how she could help her husband enjoy meals that incorporated garlic. One of the products you suggested he try was Beano. One word of warning about this product. Okay. No, it's not that. It's not that word.
It's not gas. Okay. No. Okay.
Beano contains redfish, flounder, and cod, and should not be used by people with fish allergies. Thanks. I enjoy your show.
Redfish? What is it? Redfish?
Flounder.
Flounder and cod. It's made with that. Really, it's an enzyme that is in Beano that's made with fish. Well, if you're allergic, I guess if you're severely allergic to fish, I wonder if it says that on the label. We'll have to look on the label and see whether or not it's allergic. Now, why do you think this person wrote this? I mean, who looks at the fine print on a label and says, made with redfish, codfish, and flounder?
Not many people are allergic to fish.
Well, no, but I want to know how many people can read the label. I mean, it's really kind of small. I mean, you've got to be motivated. I'd have to put on two or three pairs of glasses just to be able to read that on the label. So, yeah, you know what? Warned, you're warned, and good luck if you use Beano. Good luck.
Have a helpful tip for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Find us on Facebook, and remember, if you're a vegetarian and use Beano, you may actually be using a fish product. I never thought about that.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook. And remember, I tweet at Dr. Zorba.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1003Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.